touches base, making space within our thinking, lifting shades to show the sun, raising courage when we're shrinking, finding scope for faith begun. In the Spirit, let us travel, open to each other's pain. Let our loves and fears unravel, celebrate the space we gain. There's a place for deeper streaming, there's a time for heart to care. In the Spirit's lively scheming, there is always room to spare.
Amen. Annika Lawson is our chalice lighter this morning. Why don't you come on up, Annika? I'd like to set the sacred circle of our time together today with this chalice lighting reading. Flame of fire, spark of the universe that warmed our ancestral hearth. Agent of life and death, symbol of truth and freedom. We strive to understand ourselves and our earthly home.
Dark of winter, soft and still, your quiet calm surrounds me. Let my thoughts go where they will, ease my mind profoundly, and then my soul will sing a song, a blessed song of love eternal. Gentle darkness, soft and still, bring your quiet to me. Darkness, soothe my weary eyes, that I may see more clearly. When my heart with sorrow cries, comfort and caress me. And then my soul may hear a voice, a still small voice of love eternal. Darkness, when my fears arise, let your peace flow through
me. We are just past the time of the winter solstice, the longest night of the year. In the northern hemisphere, during this time, the earth is farthest away from the sun and turned away. The solstice is the start of a new solar year. This is the start of a new calendar year. And until the spring equinox in March, the nights will be longer than the days. For me, winter darkness can be a time of rest and healing. Coming home earlier, coming home into the darkness, relaxing, resting in the comfort of home, nesting is an important part of wintertime activities. You heard the quartet sing the words of Shelley Denham, composer, who said, "Darkness, soothe my weary eyes that I may see more clearly. When my heart with sorrow cries, comfort and caress me. And then my soul may hear a voice, a still small voice of love eternal. Darkness, when my fears arise, let your peace flow through me. Darkness has so much to offer at this time of year, and yet, in many ways, we are taught to fear the darkness. Darkness is associated with evil, despair, emptiness, the unknown things that could come out and hurt you. It's in the dark night of the soul that we confront our deepest fears. We learn early this idea about fearing the dark. Every fairy tale, every hero or heroine tale has a dark wood or a dark forest or a cave or some place of darkness that the hero must enter into. But in that entering, they're also confronting the darkness, and it is in that darkness where they reclaim their soul and their power. The psychologist Carl Jung focused a lot on this darkness that he equates with the unconscious. Jung says, until you make the unconscious conscious, it will direct your life, and you will call it fate. One does not become enlightened by imagining figures of light, but by making the darkness conscious. And then I just had to add Wendell Berry, a lovely darkness quote from Wendell Berry. He says, to go in the dark with a light is to know the light. To know the dark. Go without sight and find that the dark too blooms and sings and is traveled by dark feet and dark wings. May we celebrate the darkness this season and find that it too blooms and sings. We can't create the darkness this morning in our time together, but we can have stillness and ease. Here on the cusp of this new year, let us first release some of the regret, some of the stress, some of those things undone. Release the challenges of the past year. Let's take 3 deep breaths together and let them out with a sigh. And there are bonus points for the most evocative sigh. Here on the cusp of this new year, let us just sit together this morning in beloved community. Let us be held here in this moment in safety and love. The old year is ending and the new year has not yet come to pass. So in this moment, on this morning, there is nothing that you need to do. Let us sit here in extended silence and be at peace, with nothing to do but find stillness and rest in this stillness. Let us enter into a time of extended silence. sing together number 252, and it'll be up on 352, and it'll be up on your screen, and please remain seated.
I'm going to start with a poem of mine called Carry Me Into the Dark. Orion rises in the winter dark, shoulders and knees, a belt, a bow held taut before the charging bull. My father calls each star by its name, draws lines from hunter to quarry to the seven sisters huddled together in the night. I am not afraid of the dark. I do not need an arrow knocked on the archer's bow to call myself safe here, my eyes untouched by the glare of passing headlights. God must watch her universe like this, standing on a driveway wrapped in a soft quilt, old hands in her pockets, feet tingling with cold and wonder at the stars and the stories and all else the darkness holds. I grew up looking at the stars. My dad is an amateur astronomer, and we always had a telescope of some kind in the house. He knew about meteor showers and lunar eclipses and comets, knew when to haul the telescope out onto the driveway, and when to pile into the car to find a better view of the horizon. He taught me the names of the stars in Orion and how to find the Pleiades. And he taught me about the dark. We lived in a quiet neighborhood with few street lamps, so stargazing from our driveway was only hampered by the general light pollution of suburbia. When Dad and I were outside looking at some celestial event, sometimes a car would drive by. I learned quickly to shut my eyes, cover them with my hands, turn away, because seeing those bright lights would ruin my night vision for minutes more. I didn't begrudge the cars their headlights exactly, but I often found myself wishing they would go away, take another route through the neighborhood, leave me in the dark. When I was in sixth grade, my science teacher offered us extra credit if we watched the Geminid meteor shower at its peak somewhere in the middle of the night on a Monday in December. My dad woke me up around midnight. I dressed in several layers, including a hat and gloves, and we went outside where he had made a bed of a dozen blankets and quilts on the front lawn. We laid out there in the cold and dark for an hour or two, pointing out each meteor we saw and keeping a running tally, 47. Very few cars drove down our street so late at night, but I still knew the routine. As soon as I heard the rumbling of an engine, I shut my eyes, covered them with my hands, turned away. The only way to see the stars was if I preserved the darkness we were lying in. If I let light bleed into my field of vision, I might miss a meteor or two or three. I might miss what mattered. I am not afraid of the dark. Darkness is just like silence, a soft wool blanket that gives us space to see and hear the things we'd been missing. I find tremendous comfort in this quote by Terry Pratchett, for which I preemptively ask my physicist father to forgive me. Light thinks it travels faster than anything, but it is wrong. No matter how fast light travels, it finds the darkness has always got there first and is waiting for it.
This poem is by Jan Richardson, Blessing for the Longest Night. All throughout these months, the shadows have lengthened. This blessing has been gathering itself, making ready, preparing for this night. It is practiced walking in the dark, traveling with its eyes closed, feeling its way by memory, by touch, by the pull of the moon, even as it wanes. So believe me when I tell you, this blessing will reach you, even if you have not enough light to read it. It will find you, even though you cannot see it coming. You will know the moment of its arriving by the release of the breath that you have held for so long, a loosening of the clenching in your hands, of the clutch around your heart, a thinning of the darkness that has drawn itself around you. This blessing does not mean to take the night away, but it knows its hidden roads, knows the resting spots along the path, knows what it means to travel in the company of a friend. So when this blessing comes, take its hand, get up, set out on the road you cannot see. This is the night when you can trust that any direction you go, you will be walking towards the dawn.
As we wander through the universe on this dark winter's night, the children are all dancing and the stars are shining bright. One more word must now be spoken out, unsung to an old tune. Let's be friends this new year coming at the rising of the moon. At the rising of the moon. At the rising of the moon. Let's be friends this new year coming at the rising of the moon.
As we gaze into the stars that shine with wonder in our eyes, will we just destroy the planet, or is peace to be the prize? For the wail of fighting nations dims the beauty of the tune. Let's all dance the dance of freedom at the rising of the moon.
At the rising of the moon, at the rising of the moon. Let's all dance the dance of freedom at the rising of the moon. May the wisdom of the ancients with their messages and signs come shine on our tomorrows with the magic of the time. Like the stars that shine on the wise men, like the dawn that's coming soon. The truth shall guide us onward like the rising of the moon. At the rising of the moon, at the rising of the moon. The truth shall guide us onward at the rising of the moon.
We can live within God's garden if we tend it with our care. We can understand the meaning God's dream for this world so fair. Though we stumble through the darkness, trying far too much too soon, let's all stand up and be counted at the rising of the moon.
At the rising of the moon, at the rising of the moon, let's all stand up and be counted at the rising of the moon. Let's all stand up and be counted at the rising of the moon.
And so we turn to the light. I have been honoring and celebrating the dance of the sun and the earth for many years through rituals celebrating the wheel of the year. There are 8 celebrations during the year, four for the time when the light is increasing: Yule, Candlemas, spring equinox, and Mabon. And four when the light is diminishing: summer solstice, Lammas, fall equinox, and Samhain. Celebrating the season strengthens my awareness of the turning of the earth and deepens my connection to nature. I experience my life in the context of the larger universe. Through rituals that honor the earth and my ancestors, I feel a place in the cycle of death and rebirth. And in celebrating the turning of the year, I come to appreciate that there is a place for both darkness and light in our lives. At this time of the year, we are entering into a time of increased light that will continue until the summer solstice, the longest day of the year. Ancients would celebrate the return of the light on Yule by staying up all night to celebrate on the dawn of the longest night of the year. There's a passage tomb in Ireland called Newgrange, 5,000 years or so old from the Stone Age, a very large tomb, earth mound tomb, and it's perfectly positioned so that the light enters a small opening at the back of the passage on sunrise on solstice morning. People get into a lottery to be there on that morning. 32,000 people put in for that lottery for room for 10. In the celebrations that I have for the seasons, at our solstice celebration, we start in the darkness. Just like those in Newgrange, just like the ancients throughout time, waiting for the dawn of the morning when the light will return. And my friends gather together to celebrate. We ask, what are you waiting for? What would you have grow in your life as this light grows in the world? In this time of possibility, what changes would you weave in our world? What seeds would you plant? So on the cusp of this new year, today, we turn our faces to the light, to new beginnings, to possibility. We prepare ourselves for the year to come. And as we enter into this new year, what things will you invite into your life? Let us celebrate the light.
Yesterday afternoon, 2:37, I see on the stove clock. Better go for a walk soon, I hear myself encourage, and I do it. I head west, face full into the sun for two blocks before the sun ball slips below the tree line, and although still fully light outside and not even 3 p.m., I feel myself slipping. I have a hard time with this time of year. Mainly, it's the short days in winter, although the tule fog in January and February can break me too. In Sacramento, there are 5.5 hours less of sunlight between our longest day in June and our solstice on December 21st. 5.5 hours, I will say dramatically to anyone who asks how I am this time of year. I try to leave it at that. One of the most challenging things about depression is knowing that even supportive people don't get a kick out of your hard days. But yikes, my whole body hurts at this time from November to February. My bones ache, my shoulders and back are stiff or spasming, too much sitting, laying around, too much contracted huddle from the chills. My skin itches constantly. Hot showers for comfort, dry air, tight layered clothing. I have 20 pounds of extra winter weight. It goes away, but see tight, uncomfortable clothes above. And an uncontrollable loss of self. For 9 months, I am the tarot's happy child. Born in summer, I am a Leo lion, performance art embodied. In winter, who is this person who can't find her glasses in the morning and so goes back to bed? I don't like the woman who wanders around the house trying to decide which is the better thing to do this morning and so sits down and cries in yesterday's sweatpants. I don't know the weak person who comes in after her walk, determined with all the passion of an addict to stay up until 8 p.m. before I go to bed, but then bargains into getting into bed at 7 as long as I keep reading until 8, and then falls asleep anyway. I guess I feel the need to justify this annual crash or poor behavior. Google and some real doctors call it seasonal affective disorder. As a fan of words, I resonate with that acronym, SAD. It fits just right. But the most common response I get from folks who hear me say that I struggle with the dark is, just stop thinking about it. It's 5.5 hours shorter today. I defend myself in my mind. October 11th, we slipped below 12 hours of daylight, and it won't come back until March. I was gone daylight savings night. Ugh. I took my walk yesterday at 2:37, and the day ended. I cannot find myself right now. I do persist in practicing ways to stop thinking about it, both banal and transformative. I fit as much of the drug sunshine as I can into my day, and I grow to a great extent for me. It also involves lots of exercise, since mostly I garden and walk. I take the chance to sit in a sunny window spot anywhere. I look for cats. I have several 10,000 lux lamps intended to mimic the intensity and light spectrum of sunlight, one of which also comes on slowly in the morning to mimic the effects of a rising dawn. Mine starts at 5 a.m., an extra 2 hours of daylight. I feel like these things make a difference to me. Supposedly, they affect brain hormones such as melatonin that regulates tiredness and awake or alertness. I post these lights at my bed and my desk. Recently, I heard that there is now an earbud that stimulates the same hormonal cocktail without relying on light as the catalyst. Stay tuned for more research on that. I work a practice of grateful meditation about the dark. I put a sign on the inside of my front door in huge letters. Winter is a time of rest. I meditate on the powerful bear. Eat, sleep, cuddle, forget. As a slow life advocate, I like the preachiness of this New York Times quote. In centuries past, the hours of darkness were a time when no productive work could be done, which is to say, at night, the human impulse to remake the world in our own image so that it serves us is suspended. The night is the natural corrective to the most persistent of all illusions, that human progress is the reason for the world. As a spiritual insomniac, this gives me comfort. We have forgotten what darkness is for. In times past, people took to their beds at nightfall, but not merely to sleep. They touched one another, told stories, and with so much night to work with, woke in the middle to a darkness so luxuriant it teased visions from the mind and divine visitations. It was the hour of God. I'm proud that my head is enough above water that I can see the value of having a practice, but my experience is that I can't really bring enough energy this time of year to make these affirmations real for me. It's not God I see in this insomniac hour of 3 a.m., but responsibilities, the poor house, and unloving actions. There is salvation. The thing that I am repetitively grateful for is that it will end in February. There is great comfort and strength provided in trusting that the suffering has a reprieve date. And as of last week, we are now tilting back towards the light. I don't know if you felt it, but we have gained 166 seconds of daylight since our solstice on 10 days ago. 3 seconds on the first day and nearly 30 seconds today. I feel the light stirring in me.
This is also by Jan Richardson, How the Light Comes. I cannot tell you how the light comes. What I know is that it is more ancient than imagining, that it travels an astounding expanse to reach us, that it loves searching out what is hidden and what is lost, what is forgotten or in peril or in pain, that it has a fondness for the body, for finding its way towards flesh, for tracing the edges of form, for shining forth through the eye, the hand, the heart. I cannot tell you how the light comes, but that it does, that it will, that it works its way into the deepest dark that unfolds you, though it may seem long ages in coming. Or arrive in a shape that you did not foresee. And so may we on this day turn ourselves towards it. May we lift our faces to let it find us. May we bend our bodies to follow the arc it makes. May we open and open more.